budgeting, cash flow, and investing don't have to be scary words. The We Talk Sense podcast is here to help you learn more about money and take control of your personal finances. The We Talk Sense podcast is not a financial advisor. This podcast is made for entertainment and educational purposes only. All information shared is of a general nature and does not take into account your personal situation. You should consider whether the information is appropriate for your needs and, where appropriate, seek professional advice from a financial advisor.
For more information, please check out wemoney.com.au/disclaimer.
G'day, g'day. Blaise Pengelly here from We Talk Sense, joined by Dan Jovevsky, the money expert. Dan, how are you today?
Blaise, I'm feeling great. It is a brand new financial year. We've gotten over our party hangover of the end of financial year party that we had last week with the tax queen herself. I'm feeling recovered and refreshed. How about you?
Recovered and refreshed is a great way to frame it. I feel pretty great. And you know what? I stepped outside this morning and saw a beautiful rainbow. So what a wonderful way to start the day and start the new financial year. Today's episode, we are fully celebrating the full new financial year. It is new financial year, new me. We are doing essentially a refresher course on a couple of the things we've learned so far this year. And we're joined by Matt Hearn, who's a money coach, who will be taking us through some budgeting brain hacks so that you can start your new financial year strong. So think of this episode as, a refresher course or a clean slate for you to start your new financial year with a sense of knowledge and empowerment so you can attack your finances and really kick some money goals in the second half of, 2021 and the first half of the new financial year. But before we get into that, let's take a look at what's been happening in the world around us. Dan, did you see the news about Menu Lock?
I did. It just caught my attention very briefly. Tell me more, please.
So we've chatted about the gig economy quite a lot, and obviously Uber, Deliveroo, Uber Eats, MenuLog, they all hire people based in the gig economy, right? Where people are working for themselves, they're subcontracting or independent contracting and working under that brand. But MenuLog has become the first major gig economy delivery company to directly employ workers. So it announced a few months ago that it was going to move away from the independent contractor model, which has been pretty criticized in the media. There's been a lot of issues with unfair dismissal and minimum wage issues and people not having good working rights. I thought it was pretty interesting to see that, given the meteoric rise of how popular delivery services has become in the last 6 to 8 years, seeing them change one of the fundamental ways of how they hire and employ people was pretty cool.
Well, Blaise, this is really interesting because, only about 2 short years ago, the Fair Work Ombudsman found that Uber drivers were not employers. So I think this is global, worldwide trend, especially starting in the US and the UK, where people are really looking at this gig economy working model and considering, hey, people are not getting other benefits. So in Australia, you've got superannuation. In the US, you've got other things like health insurance benefits, which are really important to US-based sort of workers. So I think the whole world is sort of turning to these big conglomerate companies that are now turning their gig workers into employees, which actually could be a really good thing because it means that people have more continuity of work, which is awesome, but they also receive some other benefits. But I think also as well, it's actually great for some of these companies because what they do effectively in these arrangements where they have minimum working hours is they effectively get to contract these people to work for that company almost exclusively, which basically means if you're I'm not saying this is the case now for Uber, but in the States, there's been some discussion where if you're an Uber driver and you sign up to become an Uber employee, then the likelihood that you go and work for a competitor like Lyft is probably less likely. So there actually is some benefits to these companies outside of just maybe bringing some of these workers up to parity of full-time workers. So, it's interesting to see how this will all play out.
When I was living in Sydney, I've absolutely received a Uber Eats delivery from someone in a delivery uniform. They, over there, they love working multiple jobs at the same time. And it makes me think, when you're an independent contractor and you have one of the attractions of the work is how flexible it is, imagine if you were one of these companies and you really pissed off some of your staff and there was a massive strike, you'd be kind of you'd be kind of screwed, wouldn't you? Because they could all just go on strike and then you'd have no one working for you. I guess like the flexibility goes both ways in that, you know, in case there was a massive coup or something, people, you could be really stuck without any delivery drivers. Does that make
totally.
Sense?
Yeah, it does. It does blows. Viva Revolution, by the sounds of it. So, yeah, wait and see. Wait and see how it all plays out in Australia. It will be super interesting to watch the menu log case study.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Dan. The rest of the news this week is, of course, the compulsory super rate has now officially gone up to 10% moving forward, which is great. 0.5% increase from how it has been for the past few years. And that's for the next financial year moving forward, which is awesome. Now, speaking of the next financial year, let's start it strong. Shall we press play on our interview with Matt Hearn, who's got some budgeting brain hacks for us?
Let's do it, Blazy.
Dan, have you been stuck? Have you been lured into TikTok? Have you like I have, spent hours and hours, a couple of days a week, just watching the talk?
I have. My very first experience with TikTok, I downloaded the app. I thought to myself that I'm going to be just casually browsing this for 2 seconds, and then 2 a.m. later, I vividly remember what I just kept on watching. I watched it about 30 times on loop. It was this guy who had geese, and they were like his kids, and they put him in prams to like this Taylor Swift music. And for some reason, I just could not get my eyes off it. So I got sucked in and I had to delete it straight away because I don't trust myself. How about you?
Well, as I've really tried to limit my watching because it's so easy to get sucked in. But I get really addicted to the hacks. And one that I saw that has completely changed, this was maybe like 3 weeks ago, one that I saw that has completely changed the way I cook pasta is when you cook pasta and you take the pot off the stove and you get the strainer, instead of pouring over the sink the pasta into the strainer, all you do is put the strainer on like a lid, tilt the pot upside down, and then the pasta stays in the pot. Simplest hack ever. Completely changes the way I do pasta now, because now I don't have to move it all around and shuffle all the pasta, and I can just put the sauce in straight back on the stove. How good is that?
That's amazing, Wisey. That's super smart. I've heard another thing, actually, and I saw it on TikTok. When you go to the shopping center and you want to take a watermelon back home, people think that the watermelon is really heavy. What you do is you slide a bag over the watermelon and you just tilt it up a little bit and you can put it in the bag, and it just saves your back when you're buying like really big watermelons. Hey, you know, my family loves watermelons, so for me it was like super useful. There's everything on TikTok.
There is everything on TikTok, and that just seems so insanely simple. But it's a great hack that can really make, I guess, carrying watermelons or making pasta easier. Another segue to get us into our conversation today, because, you know, I love a good hack, Dan, and I thought, what about budgeting? How can we make money easier? We talk about tips and tricks and hacks quite often, but are there really simple, obvious things that we can do that can make managing money easier? And, of course, the answer is yes, there are, because we have a very special guest joining us today to talk about exactly that. Budgeting brain hacks. So he specializes in helping people working in the FIFO field, and he coaches clients all around Australia, and he even has his own money podcast as well. He's got over 15 years of experience as a certified financial planner under his belt. He blends this experience and behavioral science with money to provide advice that is insightful, practical, and delivered with humanity. His goal is to be able to help people to afford what brings them joy. And he joins us today to share insight on exactly that. Tuning in through the World Wide Web from Perth, Western Australia, is Matt Hearn. Matt, how are you going?
I am tickety-boo here in Perth, Blaze.
Thank you so much for joining us, Matt. Matt, have you seen any of these crazy hacks? Or they're not really that crazy, are they?
I certainly have, and actually after this, can you please send me the pasta strainer one, because I want to see that and use that.
Yes, of course. Matt, now I'm starting to notice a theme here. You are the second guest we've had on in recent times that's gone from engineering into the money field. Now, is this just anecdotal evidence, or is there some reasoning behind that? Do engineers make better budgeters?
Well, it's not just budgeters, but engineers are trained to be highly analytical. And so you do find a lot of engineers transition somewhere into financial services. Sometimes it's into stock or funds management and that analysis. In fact, my cousin did exactly the same, went from engineering into financial services. So I think that's why you see a lot of it. It's not just anecdotal. It is quite prevalent.
Amazing. And Matt, look, as a money coach, and we've heard the intro that you're really interested in behavioral science and how this impacts the way that we manage our money, you've come to share some budgeting brain hacks today. But before we get into the nitty gritty, you know, what exactly is a hack? And are we essentially tricking ourselves into becoming better at managing our money? Am I going to get hypnotized not to spend? What actually goes into it?
Well, that's a great question, because I think hack is just the trendy term for understanding ourselves and, you know, and using that to our best interest rather than the other way around. So, you know, I think of it in this environment, and you've mentioned it on previous podcasts, you know, we're in an environment where we're exposed to like 10,000 marketing messages a day, and many of those marketers are trained and skilled at, in a sense, hacking our brains to get us to desire stuff that we don't need or even want, really, just hacking us. So they're sort of hacking our natural brains and our habits and our behavior to get us to buy things that we don't need. And the payment providers are then doing exactly the same, making it hacking, I guess, the environment and our instincts to get us to make it easy for us to buy stuff we don't need with money we don't have. So I guess this is like flipping the hacks on our around and using it for good rather than evil.
It's a real life hackathon. Now, Matt, I know you've got an absolute plethora of budgeting brain hacks to choose from, but what is a really easy one that you can use or you can try to get started if you do want to go down this hack off?
Well, great one. The one that I think that we should borrow back before our grandparents even used the word hack. And that's the one that's been going for generations. Like if you imagine grandpa or great grandpa coming home with an envelope full of cash, and you know, this was a stereotype back in the generation, but you know, and grandma then took that and split it across multiple envelopes, jam jars or biscuit tins. So what she was doing is compartmentalizing. And why that really works is because it's really tricky for our brains to do some sort of mental accounting and sort of go, oh, yeah, this is how much I've got for this account, the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker. But grandma, you know, did all that in biscuit tins and jam jars. So compartmentalizing your bank accounts is actually a great hack that takes some of the computing processing power away from your brain and just makes it easy for you. So that would be the hack that, you know, the Barefoot Investor is now popularized and called it bucketing. But, you know, our grandparents were doing it for generations to get through tough times like the Great Depression.
Absolutely. Matt, we see such interest now in this space where it's kind of like the final frontier, right? People are really examining themselves and to uncover their personal sort of biases. And the envelope approach is one that's been, you know, tried and sort of tested, because you physically have to take the cash, put it in somewhere, and then spend it, and you get to see that money sort of moving, and you have a much deeper relationship with that experience as opposed to doing it on your debit card. And yeah, I'm just wondering now, given that we're in this sort of digital environment and cash and COVID, what are ways that people are doing the envelope method now with, you know, digital means?
In fact, it's easier now, and that's what I love that I have seen in my lifetime, is that technology has come about and made it very easy and very low cost to have multiple bank accounts. And you know, you can even get many of those accounts for free, no cost, and have as many as you want and transfer automatically between them, which is actually one of the other brain hacks. Is, you know, the more that we try to make the decisions conscious, the more energy, and we've only got a certain amount of brain energy per day in a sense, and a certain amount of willpower. So automating the transfers between those accounts is actually another hack in a way, is to make the decision once that acts in your best interest by, or say, automatically saving for a goal that really lights you up. And then you've made that decision once, executed it once, and boom, you're on track. And now it actually takes energy to take you off track in one sense. So I love the fact that today, in today's environment, we can have multiple bank accounts, and with open banking, we can instantly transfer between them now.
Open banking has been, or the instant transfer has been, one of the greatest things money-wise to happen in my life. I think I remember being a 17-year-old on a regional road trip, needing money from my savings account and sitting in a KFC car park on the phone on a Saturday night trying to talk to someone and remember my PIN for them to transfer the money for me before we had phone apps and before, like, it was after hours, so I couldn't go into the bank. And now I can pretty much think about it, press two buttons on my phone, and boom, in an instant, the money's transferred between my accounts, between accounts with friends or family. I think it's pretty incredible. So anyway, sorry, that's just me getting excited about how times have changed.
That's okay. Can I throw in, though, there is also, you know, a dark side to that instant transfer, because it does actually make it easy to dip into that special savings account and, you know, overspend if the marketers have got a hold of your desire and they've enticed you to buy that pair of jeans that you didn't really need. It's really easy to just open your app and flick it across from one account to another while you're in the store, even in the change room, and make it happen. So there is a dark side to that as well. And so we have to look at other hacks to I guess, manage the dark side of instant transfers.
That is very true. It is super simple to transfer. But, Matt, I would have to disagree. I probably definitely did need the jeans. What about temptation? How can we – so we're getting tricked into buying we're getting lured into buy things or desiring products that we don't really need. How can we resist that temptation?
I actually think it's very difficult to resist. And the latest social science is – saying that, like, I remember back in the 90s, it was all around rah-rah willpower. But I think the latest social science is saying, you know what, we think that there's not actually a whole heap of willpower that we can use in the day. In fact, some of the thought leaders in that space say, we've maybe got 100 units. Think of it that way. So you actually want to use those 100 units of willpower really wisely. So rather than trying to resist temptation, better to actually remove the temptation from you and save those willpower units for something that you can't remove. So this is part of, I guess, a global principle of redesigning your environment to remove the temptation. So, you know, don't go into the jeans store, Blaze. You know, that's so, you know, I remember.
But what if I need to?
Back in the days when I worked in the CBD and it was bustling because there was no pandemic, at lunchtime you would just wander down the malls and past the shops. So what you're doing is exposing yourself to temptation at that point in time. So an easy hack if you're prone to that sort of habit because you live near a shopping center or work near a shopping center is actually don't go through the shopping center. And if you do, go in with a specific list so that you're only going into the store. So the temptation is there. The other one, which again, we use technology, is to actually use the ad blockers that you can get on your browsers to stop those sort of things coming in and unsubscribe from all the marketing emails that you are getting. You know, you go in once and give them your email address so you get a bonus pair of jeans for the other pair of jeans, but then you're getting an email every single week. Like some of the online stores are giving me multiple per day at the moment after I transact. So remove that temptation of those emails coming in because those marketers are absolutely skilled at enticing desire. That's why they're sending them. So little hacks like that are great ways to remove temptation because it's much easier than resisting temptation.
Just jumping in here, if you need a better picture of your finances, you have multiple bank accounts that you want to track and see in one place, or if you want to see where you're spending your money, download the free WeMoney app. Set yourself up for the next financial year by setting up and tracking your progress towards your money goals for free in the app. If you download WeMoney and use the code PODCAST, you'll earn $5 on sign up when you connect an eligible bank account. All right, back to the brain hacks.
Matt, another topic that I think that you're really interested in by virtue of how you market your own self is around sort of FIFOs and people in that sort of territory. And I think using the analogy of FIFOs, my dad was FIFO, still is FIFO. He's been a FIFO person for like 30 years of his life. And he comes from a more traditional school of managing, you know, his money, which is putting dollar bills in his top pocket and that being his bank. But you know, some of the stories that we hear from people that, you know, get exposed to a lot of money or end up seeing a big increase in earnings, there's this concept of lifestyle creep that you talk about as well. Just talk a little bit more about that in terms of how that can potentially become, you know, an issue and tie that back into the behavioral psychology of how we think about progress and making money and getting increases like bonuses and salaries or high-paying jobs.
Yeah, and that's a really deep one. I know that you've also covered it on other episodes, Dan. But I guess the when I first was taught about and learned about lifestyle creep, it almost came with a bit of shame. It's almost like, why? What's wrong with me that I'm in lifestyle creep? But the more I delved into the social science, I realized actually it's our natural instinct. We naturally crave greater comfort and convenience because I have a suspicion we're inherently lazy as a species. So this natural craving for greater comfort and convenience is there. And so lifestyle creep, for those who perhaps haven't heard of the term, is where our standard of living and our expenses raise to meet our income. So you could say our lifestyle is creeping up to whatever we're earning in that sense. But there's another social science concept behind it called hedonic adaptation, which is a fancy way that the social scientists call, for what I call saying, basically it's taking your lifestyle for granted. So when, particularly with possessions more than experiences, we get adapted to them very, very quickly. You know, the new car smell goes away, that bright, shiny object, it's no longer so shiny, we need a new one. And so we're adapting to the pleasure, which is the hedonic part. And so once we've adapted to the pleasure, we are naturally craving more pleasure in our life, more happiness. So where are we going to get that from? Spending more money. And that environment around us is in that we've grown up in, certainly in the capitalist society, it actually needles that insecurity in our brain that we are not yet good enough for, unless we have greater status, the best, shiniest object, the newest and the best, basically, object. So, and that's what we need to fit in as well. So it's needling two things about status and power and fitting in and belonging, which are two human nature really core traits for survival from the savannas of Africa. So that's where lifestyle creep is actually really, really natural. The first thing is to accept it, but then also to accept it's natural, but then use some of these techniques to work against it. And so I guess awareness is the first step, to know that you're naturally going to do that. The next one I would say is, well, every time you get an increase in your income, use one of these compartmentalized accounts. So set up a brand new bank account if you don't already have one, and automate a transfer for the day after your pay comes in for the amount of your pay increase. Because again, you're hacking yourself. If you shrink the size of the compartment, funnily enough, you stick to that smaller size. Just like shrinking the size of the food that you put on your plate, you know, suddenly you get adapted to that. So that's one of the techniques to hack your brain by using a system to combat lifestyle creep. Hopefully that's what answers your question, Dan.
Absolutely. You know, I really like that tie into the African sort of savannah. I think that's it's a fascinating topic that we love talking about, and I think we often need to remind ourselves that we are fallible, and we need to understand how we might overcome that by recognizing, not punishing ourselves, but understanding that it is an issue and how we overcome that.
It's just so easy to go, oh, I'm worth it, you know, oh, treat yourself, or like it's just so easy to justify spending money or doing things for yourself that you might not really be that good, or you might know deep down or subconsciously probably isn't the best decision, like spending that extra money or eating that fourth piece of cake or whatever it is, you know. So yeah, I think we're all super guilty of that. So it's so addictive to be able to want to spend money and chase that feel-good feeling. Is there a way that we can get the same sort of rush of endorphins when it comes to budgeting? Can we make, or can we make money feel as good and as desirable, and or saving money, can we make that the kind of feeling that we want to chase after as well? Is there a way we can hack that, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely we can. And so a quick question to throw back to you. When you said the word saving, did you get a bit of a buzz of pleasure?
Not really. Oh, did I get a buzz of pleasure? Not really. But you know what? When I open up my bank, or when I open up my app and see how much I have saved, I do get really excited. Talking about saving, not really, because it feels like I'm sacrificing to save. But when I see the numbers go up, and when I see the totals go up in my net worth, I'm like, oh my God, I get really motivated. And I will check my app 4 or 5 times a day. It won't change, but it'll probably go down because I usually spend, but checking it is addictive for me.
Interesting. So that was a bit of a, I had a suspicion you'd say no, actually, Blaze, because this is, because the word saving actually has all those other meanings attached to it, and doesn't really give us a buzz. But there's a great behavioral scientist out of Stanford University, Professor BJ Fogg, who wrote a book, Tiny Habits, published a bit over a year ago. And one of the things I love that BJ Fogg says is around we change best when we feel good. So the hack, I guess, in enticing there is to how do you make doing the right thing or the thing that you want to do feel good? So in this case, how do we make saving feel good? So the way we do that is, I think, by specifically naming those extra bank accounts that you've got. Like, make them really specific. And that's what I love about technology is we can have 10 savings accounts if we want to, 20. It doesn't really matter. And so make them super specific. And then you get, because it's specific, you're more likely to tie it to something that is meaningful to you, which will then give you a buzz every time around it. So that's one thing. Like, if you just call it a savings account, it's actually really not giving you the buzz. So it's not lighting you up every time you transfer money to it. But if you see that your holiday to Greece account is going up, or, you know, the Pilbara account, or the, in my case, going up to the northwest past the Pilbara in Western Australia, you know, that lights me up to think about that. So seeing money goes in there is a way to hack myself and give myself that buzz of reward that for when I'm doing the right thing of saving, just the same way that I get the buzz when I tap and go for a new pair of jeans, for example.
Yeah, nice. Is this similar? This would be a sinking fund, is that right?
You know, what's a sinking fund? You know, often I go back to, you know, the sinking fund is, I think, a great term that accountants have used for generations, but I don't know that us regular human beings ever use that term. Mm. So I love, again, to hack our brains and say, well, what's a natural term for me to use? And so I'm constantly searching for that. So I don't really know if it's a sinking fund. I would just say, look, you need a fund that is a specific account for every particular goal that you're saving for, and automate the transfer to it so that you've made the decision once. And you it's almost like, I wish I could automate going to the gym this morning, but I can't. But in saving, you can, which is even better, right? I can make the decision once that I am going to get financially fit and automate a saving, and away we go. So I'm not sure. Maybe it is like a sinking fund, but I don't really find that term as enlightening or easy to latch onto for our brains.
Yeah, of course. I think so. I've been trialing this hack of naming my savers for a little while now. I use one of the banks I use is Up, and they have this fabulous thing where you can create many, many, many savers accounts attached to your main account. And I'm just looking through now, and would you guys like to have a guess about how many different savers I have set up? Because I think I've gone a little bit crazy, but I would like to hear your opinions on how many different small things that I'm saving for.
9.
Oh my gosh, straight off, you're on the money. Yep, it is 9 accounts. But you're so right. You know, I've got my road trip account, I've got an emergency account, I have my rent account, all these different things that I'm saving for. And it's so difficult if I'm on a night out and I want to shine another round of drinks and I come into this account and I go, oh, no, I don't want to take from my emergency fund because that's for emergencies. Oh, I don't really want to take from my personal road trip fund because then it will take me longer to go on my personal road trip. Having that barrier and the reminder, I 100% agree, Matt, that is such a good hack, because it really, before when I had my money, my savings in a lump sum, it's so easy to dip into because you have no idea where it's going. When you see right in front of you where it's going and what you're stopping yourself from in the future, makes it definitely, definitely much harder to withdraw from.
Actually, you've just raised one of the other hacks, because there's two, you could say, hacks that come from compartmentalizing and specifically naming your accounts. One is the hack of making progress visible, which makes it feel good to do the right thing. But what you've just described is the other hack, which is making trade-offs visible. So we want to make it feel bad, you could say, to do the wrong thing. And so you get basically two benefits there of using that compartmentalization technique, which is why I mentioned it as the first one, because it is really foundational. Making trade-offs visible makes it, gives you that extra little bit of hopefully of attention to go, actually, maybe I don't need that. And sometimes just simply having a naming an account can give you enough of an interjection in that decision to stop you doing it. So, yeah, it's the second hack. So good on you, Blaze. You're onto it.
Awesome, Matt. And what's another tip that you've got that you think we haven't covered off, Matt, but would be super useful to learn more about?
Yeah, this is one that you guys may have heard of, but it's somewhat recent coming out of social science. And you know, BJ Fogg's book I mentioned was called Tiny Habits. Another really popular habits book that's come out in the last couple of years is called Atomic Habits by James Clear. And this is you know, was amazing to me, because there's all this go hard or go home, rah, rah stuff that happened here. Actually, flip it, go small. So the brain science behind it is that progress feels good. And so if you go small and consistent, you can start seeing yourself making progress. Whereas going hard, you can sometimes burn yourself out and fall backwards, which can then actually, you know, be a downer for you, and end up, you know, making your three hands in there and giving up. So, you know, start small, you know, momentum before magnitude is the way to go. So if you start small and consistent, then you're getting momentum. And that momentum just really builds and builds and builds, and you start to see progress faster and faster. So, you know, that is probably one of the great things out of the recent social science that I think really totally changes how we go about, or revolutionizes in some way, the way that we go about changing any of our behaviors, including those about money. So with that, so taking it into the money example, if you've got a holiday savings account, just set up an automatic transfer for $1 pay is a very good start in that sense.
I'm so glad you mentioned Atomic Habits by James Clear. I haven't actually read the book, but I can't listen to an email. I receive his email every Thursday. He does a weekly email, and he talks about tiny, tiny changes. And something that has stuck with me is that he says, if you do 1%, I'm going to butcher this because I can't remember the actual figures, but I will find it and put it in the show notes. If you get 1% better every day over the year, that is, I don't know the maths, but you're like 365% better by the end of the year, by just by doing 1% better every single day. And doing 1% small, small, small amount. Maybe it's that you're meditating or going to the gym or transferring that $1 to your savings account. The tiny changes really add up over time. And I guess it's like compounding, right? It just improves and grows exponentially over time. So
yeah, that's right. And probably the extra part that's worth mentioning from both James Clear and BJ Fogg is, and particularly BJ Fogg says this, is set that first step as one that you know that you can and will do. So that's how you could say a criteria for deciding it. So in that, to extend the example I gave before of transferring $1, that probably feels like you can and will do it. So set that first transfer as something where you go, yeah, nah, shrug it off, won't miss it. And then the next pay you increase it, and the next pay you increase it. So that's a really great, great thing to try to doing if you're wanting to break a habit of overspending and build a savings habit. Start small and make your progress visible and your trade-offs visible.
Yeah, awesome. Matt, we've only got time for one more hack today. So for your final hack, your final tip, I suppose, not that this is financial advice, but for your final hack, what would be the one thing you could leave our listeners with that if they want to start hacking their brains, get better with their money, what should they start today?
Well, if we say what they should start today is compartmentalizing their accounts, absolutely. But if I throw another one in that I kind of love is, you know, because we've used the word budget as we naturally would with a We Money podcast, right, and a We Talk Sense. But
yes,
budget often has all these connotations in it, that particular word, right? So for me, the people have said to me over the years, oh, they need to come up with a better word for budget, or they need to change the word. And I'm a bit of a geek, if you haven't worked it out. And so I love etymology, the origins of words. And I looked it up, and the origin of the word budget is actually from French, and it was a budget, which was actually the leather folder that people carried stuff around in. And then over the years, that leather folder began to, the governments, you know, would carry the financial plans of the country that they were working with. They'd carry the financial plans in this leather wallet, leather folder. And so then the population started to call that the financial plans the budget or the budget, when it got into the English language in that sense. So it's not about changing the word. It's the meaning that we've associated it. We've come to associate the word budget or diet with restriction. but it's not actually meaning that as well. So the word budget actually is the leather folio. You carry your financial plans for your financial prosperity and affording a life that lights you up. So for me, I think, well, let's hack our brains in that sense. Don't change the word budget. Change the way we mean it. And I think I find it kind of handy to think, well, if the etymology and the origin of the word budget is from France, then maybe I can hack my brain and just say budget with a sexy French accent every time I'm talking about my budget. Just like we would say target or target. Well, it just changes the way I think about it. And so from here on in, Blaise, please do mention a budget, not a budget.
A budget. Oh, ha, ha, ha. Wow, I like that. And it's such interesting origins of the word. I had no idea.
Yeah, I love it too.
Matt, that was an incredibly insightful way to talk about your budget, and I'm looking forward to confusing everyone in my day today talking about that. That's absolutely hilarious and also insightful. As we wrap up, what are some final hints and tips that you want to leave at the audience with in terms of, you know, one big takeaway in terms of managing your financial life? And then also, we'd love to hear how people can learn about more about you and what you do.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. The one thing I'd love to leave with people is looping back to something we already said about willpower, is that if you've been struggling to save, it's really not your fault. Yes, it's your responsibility to fix it, but it's not your fault because the environment around us is designed to entice you to buy, to desire things that you don't need and make it easy to buy them in that sense. So I think of it like a spending buffet, and I've never been to a buffet and not overeaten. It's just too hard, right? So if you've been struggling to save, it's not a character flaw. It's not that you're not good enough. It's that you just never have been taught the right systems to have to navigate that environment of abundant temptation and easy money. So the one thing I'd love to leave everybody with is just to say, hey, go easy on yourself. And to become a good saver, to become financially fit and afford a life that lights you up, is just go about finding the right system for you to navigate that environment. And then you'll be affording a life that lights you up.
Awesome advice. Thank you, Matt. If our listeners want to find out more about you, where should they go?
So, Blaise, I'd love it if they could go to matthern.com.au, which is Matt with two T's, and Hearn spelled H-E-R-N.com.au, or check out my own podcast, which is moneyforlife.link.
I'll chuck a link to those sites and your podcast in the show notes so you can check out Matt there. Matt, thank you so much. That was so insightful. I am so excited to hack my brain and my budget.
An absolute pleasure. Thank you, Dan and Blaise. It's been a delight to join you on the We Talk Sense podcast.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for tuning in.
Now, we are taking a one-week break, a little holiday, so we won't be in your ears next Monday, but we will be back on Monday, the 19th of July.
If you want to learn more about your finances, then give the We Money app a go. If you want to track all your spending, all your credit scores, and also access a really powerful community, then head over to the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store and download We Money. And better yet, if you want $5, simply enter the referral code podcast to get $5 on us.
And a great treat to start the new year would be if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. If you're tuning in for the first time, or if this is your 37th time listening to the show, thank you so much for joining us. We would really, really love to hear your feedback. That would be a wonderful New Year's treat for us.
And if you've got any feedback about the show, then please reach out directly on Instagram at a handle GetWeMoney. We love your feedback. If you want to give us another favor, then just share the show with a friend that needs help with understanding their money a little bit better. Thanks.
We will catch you on the 19th of July. Have a lovely week off and can't wait to be back in your ear holes then. Have a good one. See you later.
See ya.
Goodbye.